They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me on the Commons today is Mike Pugh. Mike has sort of a unique story. He lives in an HOA, and there's a meadow in his yard. He lives on 5.6 acres, and there's an HOA there. Mike, why do you need an HOA?
Well, when the neighborhood was developed back in the early 90s, it was developed as an HOA neighborhood, and they actually have they don't have really strict covenants or anything. They're pretty bare bones covenants, but I think there was a desire, you know, back then for the neighborhood to have some uniformity, and people that bought homes here, I think we're all happy with that. Our lot is the largest and is different from the rest of the lots in the HOA, in that we don't actually border anybody else's property directly. We live next to a 17th century farm, and you know, open fields and everything over there. We're surrounded on three sides by woods and streams, and you can only just barely see any of our neighbors through the trees here. We're pretty set off from the rest of the neighborhood. The rest of the neighborhood, the houses all have clear views of each other, and for the most part, and you know, they mow the common areas to pretty much look like a golf course. Yeah, that's why there's an HOA, really, is more for that part of the neighborhood than for this part. I would personally prefer that we were not in an HOA, but we are. And in Virginia, once you're in one, it's very difficult to get out, if not impossible.
You're right. It is difficult. Actually, there is a way to do it, but you have to move heaven and earth to get out of them. And the reason you have the HOAs is not so much for your benefit, but for the local municipal governments, because they like to collect all those tax dollars, but they don't really want to do anything for that, for that money. But you have 2 acres that is part. It's a meadow.
Yeah. When we bought the property, and actually when the property was originally developed, when the first homeowner bought it, there was a 2-acre section at the back of the property that was left longer grass. It's never been mowed as a lawn. It has always been a meadow. And it's been, you know, different owners have bush hogged it occasionally. You know, I'm the third owner of this property in 20 years. Different homeowners have taken care of it about the same over the years. I actually bush hog it a little bit less than some of the previous owners do, and the reason for that is because when we would mow it in the middle of the season, I found that, you know, we were killing lots of wildlife, and it was ugly, and I didn't really like doing it that way. So I went to the Audubon Society and said, hey, I've got this 2-acre tract of meadow. How should I be taking care of it? And the Audubon Society came out and inspected the property, and were very happy with what they found here. And they said, well, probably just mow it once a year in the spring, in the early spring, just to keep wooded plants from growing, and you're good. And, you know, just let it grow the rest of the year and just mow it every year, and you'll start to see native grasses come back, and you'll start to see, you know, native plants and other things appear, which we did. The fact that it's not a lawn, according to our covenants, means that our responsibility is to use good property management techniques in maintaining the area. You know, the covenants actually say all lawns have to be mowed, and the property as a whole has to be maintained using good property management techniques. I thought the Audubon Society was probably a pretty good source on what good property techniques were for a meadow, and so I followed their advice. Now the HOA has come back and said, well, actually, we think it's a lawn. We think it should be a lawn, and so it should all be mowed as a lawn. And that's how the lawsuit started.
So you are in court on this?
We are going to court, yeah. What they did was they issued a violation, and we went to several meetings to discuss it with them. And what they decided in the meetings was that they would not fine us and they would not put a lien on the property, but that they would maintain the violation on file. And that when we sold the property, that they would not approve the transfer unless the meadow was mowed. And that whoever owned the house after us would have a lawn back there rather than a meadow. And our position is we bought a house with a meadow. They don't have any rules that restrict us from having a house with a meadow, particularly when it's had a meadow since day one. And they don't have the right to block the sale of the property to someone else who wants a meadow. One of the reasons I bought the property, actually, was this natural area out and back. It's a really nice piece of land. Previous owners have all taken very good care of it. They've planted beautiful trees here, and it's a park-like setting. And the meadow itself actually can't be viewed directly other than just little glimpses through the trees by anybody that's outside of our property. But they didn't like the fact that we were letting the grass grow. They didn't like the way we were managing it, and so they told us that it has to be turned into a lawn. So the lawsuit is basically to require them to remove the violation from the file and allow us to transfer the property to the next owner and allow the next owner to decide for themselves what they want to do with the meadow.
Are you thinking of selling? Are you planning on moving soon?
No, not particularly. Okay. I really like it here a lot. But my wife and I, our children are grown. It's a big house. We still like having it, for the family to come home on the holidays and all that. But sometime in the next few years, we probably will decide to move it, to move and sell the house and move on. When we do that, I would very much like for the next owners to have the same option I do to observe all kinds of beautiful wildlife back there. Milkweed grows very abundantly back there. We had literally hundreds of monarch butterfly caterpillars out there about a month ago. I went out and took pictures of them. I think you saw my video, and
I did.
And some of those pictures were literally taken, like 2 or 3 days before I published the video back at the beginning of October. So I think it's a feature of the property that actually enhances the value of the property. It certainly enhances my life, and I think it's just irresponsible for the HOA to try to force us to mow it.
I totally agree with you, and I think it's a property right, as you have mentioned in the article. It's a property right that you have.
It is.
That you're trying to protect, and that's why I want to talk to you, because I think that our rights, property rights, are in danger of being just taken away, and that's not such a great thing. I've also learned since I learned about your plight, I've also learned a whole lot more about monarch butterflies. I always thought they were beautiful, but I did not realize that they're quite incredible little butterflies.
Yeah, they migrate thousands of miles, they have begun their migration south now, and the offspring of the butterflies that are migrating south to Mexico at the moment will turn around next spring and come back to this exact same place. They will come back to the same meadow, which I think is just absolutely remarkable.
So if you're not allowed to have a meadow, if you have a nicely manicured lawn, what happens to the monarch?
Well, presumably they will look for somewhere nearby to land, but it's quite likely that in that process that an awful lot of them would perish.
And that would be sad, because apparently they're becoming extinct. 90% of them have died.
They are. There's been a huge reduction in the monarch butterfly population over the last few years. And it's our meadow, because of where it's situated versus the running water that's around it and the fact that it's an open space and the way that we take care of it and the way that the milkweed grows, really is a great haven for monarch butterflies. Our case would be strong even if there weren't any monarch butterflies here. But I think the fact that we do have a big monarch population on the property is it makes it even more irresponsible for the HOA to be trying to force us to mow it.
You're also certified as a meadow habitat, right?
What the Audubon Society has told us is that they can't certify us as a habitat until the lawsuit is complete, because if we were to lose the lawsuit, then it would no longer be a habitat. But they, in the report that they sent to us, they said that, you know, that should we should the courts decide to allow us to keep the meadow, that they absolutely will certify it as a habitat. They were very excited about the diversity of wildlife that we had there, the natural grasses and insects and just the wildlife in general.
So if it's certified, what does that mean? Nobody can do anything about it? They can't make you tear it down?
No, it doesn't carry any legal restrictions with it. For that, you know, to keep anyone from forcing me to mow it down, I need the support of the courts, which is why we're in the middle of this lawsuit.
And when do you go to court?
We go to court on December the 14th.
December the 14th. Would you keep me posted on what happens?
I
would love to follow this. There are other things. Over the years that I've been doing this show and following what's going on in HOAs, HOAs seem to go out of their way to be detrimental to anything and everything we do. Throughout different parts of the country, they ban xeriscaping, even when you've got water shortages. So people in an HOA can be fined by the HOA for not watering their lawns and fined by the local municipal government for watering their lawns. So no matter what you do, you're sort of caught between a rock and a hard place. One of the things that we're finding here in this part of the country is the fact that there's no drainage. We've overbuilt that when you have water and snow and all of that, it sort of runs down to the Chesapeake. Developments are now required to have these drainage ponds. But according to what I read about your meadow, the types of plants that you have deeper roots and they aerate. And so there's a lot more actual drainage that takes place on the property?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we sit very high up in the watershed. The streams that run alongside our lawn feed into Goose Creek, which feeds into Potomac. And we're very near the source of Goose Creek. We're very high up in the watershed. The fact that we have a meadow actually absorbs an awful lot of the runoff from our lawn, and I really don't use fertilizers or anything on our lawn. I mow it, and it's green in the 4 acres that we do mow, but I really don't like to use chemicals or anything, but an awful lot of people around us do. And so what the meadow does is, because it has a deep root system and because it keeps the soil loose and able to absorb water, then it actually helps absorb a lot of that runoff. Some of the chemicals and stuff that people use on their lawns, it helps to sort of dissipate that and not pollute our water supply, and then support plants that help with pollinators and bees, birds, butterflies, all of that.
I'm going to tell people how to find your video on YouTube. If you go to Mike's Meadow and just put that in there, you will find it.
Sometimes if I just put Mike's Meadow, I have seen a lot of other things pop up on YouTube. But if you type Mike's Meadow Goose Creek, then it will definitely bring it up at the top.
Okay, so Mike's Meadow Goose Creek.
Goose Creek.
And yes. That's a tongue twister there, Mike. That's a real tongue twister. All right. I will have the link to that on my in my promo and on my website. So anybody who is listening to it on my website, listening to the show, you can just go and click. But you want to watch it and you want to see it. You want to see the video. And you want to see the wild animals there. It must be absolutely wonderful to be able to sit there and watch the deer and just know that you've got all of these animals out there.
It is. It's a beautiful setting. The whole, you know, our house was built with really the whole back of it as windows, you know, with the intent that you could look out over this gorgeous piece of property. And we have you know, a deck on the back and a porch on the side of the house that. The porch is, we use, you know, as an outdoor barbecue kitchen and really as an outdoor living space quite a bit. And from there, yeah, we can watch the deer, foxes, hawks, all kinds of animals. And it's a very vibrant, active wildlife preserve. And like I said, that's a big part of the value of this house. That's a big part of what makes this property special. And it just... I'm just dumbfounded that anybody would want to destroy that.
Yeah, I'm dumbfounded by a lot of things that are being done. But I keep thinking, what a wonderful place to have small children to learn about the butterflies, to see the butterflies. I mean, they're usually fascinated by everything. Why would I can't imagine wanting to destroy that.
The reason that's been given to me by people on the HOA board is they feel that the properties in the neighborhood need to be uniform, and the fact that we have a meadow makes us different from everyone else, even though they can't see the meadow. They literally cannot see it, but they know it's here, and that makes us different than everybody else, and they're very intent on making sure that the properties have a uniformity about them. You know, we follow all of their other rules. We mow the rest of the lawn. And trim all the trees, and if we paint the house, we ask them for permission if we're going to change color, and, you know, all of the other rules that go with being an HOA. They don't actually have a rule against the meadow, but they're trying to create one out of thin air, and we just said enough. You can't do that.
Their reason sounds absolutely ludicrous. There's nothing wonderful about being exactly like everyone else. There really isn't. And it doesn't protect property values. I mean, there's this mania that says, oh, if there's any deviation at all, then you're going to be devaluing property. And it's absolutely not true. It's absolutely not true. There's nothing to support their allegation. So how did they, I mean, they know it's there. How did they see it?
Well, it's been here for years.
And it's never been a problem.
And it's never been a problem. The trees around it are thicker than they used to be. I think back in the early days of the property, they were able to see the meadow a lot more clearly than they can now. So they knew it was there. When I contacted the person who bought the property first, a gentleman who lives in rural Virginia now, and I told him what was going on, and I said, you know, did the house have the meadow when you bought it? And he says, oh, yeah. He said, the day I bought it, the meadow was there. And he said, you can ask this person and that person and this person who lived in the neighborhood at the time. They all knew the meadow was there. They didn't ever object to it. They never said anything about it. But they never said anything about it. They just, and I've had some conflicts with those people on the HOA board. And I think that,
surprise.
To a large extent, they did this because they were mad at me for some other things.
Surprise. That yep. happens all the time. That happens all the time. There's in the article, it says that Susan Abraham, a professor of landscape design at George Washington University and the owner of a landscape company, says that ecologically friendly design is the trend with HOAs today. Many of Loudoun's most well-known developments, including Willowsford, River Creek, and Broadlands, are beautifying their landscapes, reducing mowing costs, and improving their stewardship of the land with more natural landscape practice. So there seems to be a trend towards what you already have.
Mm-hmm. There are a number of HOAs in Loudoun County that are working very closely with the Loudoun Commonwealth or the Loudoun Conservation Cooperative, with the Audubon Society, with the Piedmont Environmental Council. A lot of the HOAs out here have actually started to try to be more conservation focused in their in maintaining their common areas and in the way they approach things with their members. Unfortunately, not ours. One of the people who will testify as an expert witness at the trial in December for us is she's a professor at George Washington University, but she also owns a landscape company that specializes in working with HOAs to put in more environmentally sustainable landscaping, which is a terrific move. You know, Loudoun County has grown very, very rapidly.
Yeah,
it has a big impact on the wildlife here, and having an impact on the wildlife has an impact on everybody's quality of life. So it makes perfect sense to, get away from this notion that we had in the 1980s that a beautiful neighborhood was one where all the lawns were mowed, to an inch and a half, and look at some other alternatives. So I'm very encouraged, actually, by the direction Loudoun County seems to be going there, and by the fact that a lot of the HOAs are taking that view. It's just unfortunately the one I live in does not. It's a lot of people who just want the whole place to look like a golf course.
Well, you seem to think that it's personal, that they're going after you for some other reason, which is usually the way it happens, right?
That is my belief. Yes, that is my belief.
They're in a position of power, and they're going to go after you for whatever.
Yep.
There's something else in this article that I wanted to touch on, because it says experts say that HOA CCNRs must be reasonable and flexible. Actually, that's dead wrong. They can't be flexible. They can be amended. They can be, they can be rescinded. But they can't be flexible, because flexibility would imply that whoever's at the helm of the HOA has the ability to decide, to be arbitrary and decide who to go after and who to leave. In fact, I was in court one day when one of the attorneys was representing the HOA said, "Oh, this is a living document. You don't have to follow it." And I thought the judge was going to come flying off the bench and go straight for her neck, which is exactly what I would have done. But she's absolutely livid. But the fact is that there's nothing in your governing documents prohibiting the meadow that was there.
Yeah, all that the governing documents say is that all lawns must be mowed. And our contention is that that is not a lawn and has never been a lawn from the date of first possession by the first owner, which we verified with the first owner, and he will also testify at the trial.
Oh, good. Okay. Have you ever reached out? Do you know who the developer was? Have you ever tried to talk to him?
Yeah, as near as I can tell, the developer is no longer in business here. I have not been able to track them down.
That's too bad.
But it's not essential anyway. The thing that's important from a legal perspective is what was the state of the property on the date of first development, or on the date of first possession. And on the date of first possession, the property had a meadow. And it still does, and it will for a long time, if I have anything to say about it.
And you'll keep it there. Well, I hope you do, because I'd like to see... I'd like to see some of these horrible drainage ditches, ponds, disappear, because they're dangerous. I mean, they attract kids, and so many kids have drowned in them. And they're an attractive nuisance, as the lawyers like to call things like that. And so when you have a situation where it's not necessary to have a drainage pond, it's not necessary to have something that's going to be an attractive nuisance and going to be hazardous to kids, why would anybody want to get rid of it? I mean, it just makes no sense.
I agree.
It makes absolutely no sense. What other wildlife? You talked about foxes and deers, and of course the butterflies. And what else? You talk about small animals being caught in the lawnmower blades.
Yeah, that was really when I moved to that's when I moved to go talk to the Audubon Society, because we would get, you know, rabbits and moles and all kinds of things caught up. Every time we mowed it in the summertime, we'd go out and find just all kinds of small animals destroyed, which I didn't like. And besides that, even from a distance, just cutting it in the middle of the summer, I thought was unattractive. I just like it growing naturally, frankly, a lot better than something that just looks like grass.
Well, there's so many beautiful flowers
that
are growing. And, you know, VDOT's doing that in little parts of medians, just to avoid mowing everything. They've just left portions and planted wildflowers there. I mean, you can buy wildflowers in a can and just the seeds and just throw them out there and be surprised at the beautiful wildflowers that grow.
Yes, and that is something that we've been doing here as well, as we've been every year mixing in some seeds of wildflowers to naturally occurring wildflowers in Virginia to just sort of add to the color. And now, after several years of doing that, we're starting to see some results. Some of them take a few years to come up, but we are getting a lot more color in the meadow than we did have.
So you have a whole lot of flowers.
We do, yes.
And do the deer eat that? I mean, do the animals eat the flowers, or what's?
The animals pretty much use the whole meadow the flowers attract butterflies for one thing, which I like a lot because I really enjoy butterflies, but. Just the meadow in general provides food and cover. The deer graze a lot, and then in the wintertime when everything, you know, falls over, it provides cover and warmth and protection for the wildlife that live here.
So that's right. You leave it, you let it grow during the winter.
Yeah. So right now it's at the point where everything is starting to go dormant. You know, everything's turning brown. And falling over, and we'll leave it that way all winter. That's if you look at the video that I put together, which the pictures were taken about 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago. There are pictures of the milkweed that are all brown at the end, and that's what it looks like right now. And that will, I've seen it happen year after year. All of that will sort of fall over. The deer will lay on top of it. They'll chew on some of it, and it all just lays there all winter. And then next April, right around tax day every year, then I have it all mowed, bush hogged very close, and it all starts over again. And it'll grow, to 3 or 4 feet tall all throughout the meadow through the year, and we just do that same cycle every year.
Wow. You talk about birds as well. I love birds. What kind of birds do you have?
Oh, I'm no expert on birds at all. I do see bluebirds out there. I see a lot of birds of prey. We get a lot of hawks that circle over the meadow and then drop down to feed. We get all sorts of sparrows and finches, and I do put I put bird feeders out close to the house in the winter months, and we do get a lot of cardinals and tufted titmouse and all sorts of other things, but I'm certainly no expert on what the birds are.
So it sounds absolutely fascinating, amazing, and wonderful to live there and just watch everything.
That's why I like it here.
That's why you like it there. Yeah, I can see why. I can see why. I can understand why you'd want to keep it that way. How many of your neighbors, are they friendly? I mean, What do the neighbors think of it?
Well, aside from the ones that are on the board, I haven't talked a lot with the neighbors about it. Those that I have talked to are very supportive. None of the people who live in the properties that surround ours, you know, on the other side of the trees, have ever complained about it. I was out taking pictures because I had to for the lawsuit of, you know, what it looked like from the road and whether you could see it or not. And a lady who's new to the neighborhood who I had not met was walking down the street with her her sons, who were like probably 8 to 12 years old. And she stopped and said, you know, what are you doing? Because I look like a stalker. And I said, well, I'm Mike Pugh. Hello. And, you know, I live in that house over there. And I said, you've probably heard about the lawsuit we're involved in. I said, for the lawsuit, I have to take pictures to show that the meadow isn't really visible from anywhere else. And we had a nice conversation. She said, you know, she said, none of us over here really want to get involved with the HOA, and nobody really wants to, you know, nobody really wants to get involved in this dispute. But she says, I haven't talked to anybody who thinks that they should be making you mow it. And we're not really sure what's going on. And we had a nice conversation about it. I don't know who the folks in the HOA have talked to. I know that there are some people in the neighborhood that think it should be mowed. But I know that there are also a lot of people in the neighborhood who don't think it should be mowed, and probably most of the neighborhood just doesn't care, to be honest. There are 72 houses here, 72 properties. And on the HOA board, I used to be on the board years ago. On the HOA board, it's pretty much the same 4 to 8 people that are on it year after year after year, and nobody else really cares enough. I don't know. I don't object to HOAs on principle. You know, I understand. I would prefer that this property not be in an HOA, but I also love living here and, you know, don't plan on moving. I don't have anything against HOAs on principle. I have things against people on HOAs who try to abuse the power that it gives them. And that's my interpretation of what's happened here.
I hear from a lot of people, and most people say, I just want to be left alone. I bought a house to live in. I just want to be left alone.
Yeah. I sit in the middle of 6 acres. Nobody else can see me. I can't see anybody else's house. I work from home in this beautiful setting. And I can't imagine why they won't just leave me alone, especially because I take care of the property and I mow the lawn, and you know, we have an arborist come out and work with the trees, and we plant gardens and flowers, you know, all over the front of the property where people can see it from the street. And yet there's this meadow that these people can't even see, that for some reason bothers them so much that they feel the need to go to court over it. I don't get it.
If I lived next door, I'd be jealous that I could not see it and enjoy the wildlife and the animals and the birds. And so there seems to be this thing, oh, my God, can anybody see it? And, you know, whenever something comes up, it's like, can the neighbors see it? My question always is, so what if the neighbors can see it?
Yes.
I mean, I would love to see it. I would absolutely love to see the wildflowers growing. I'd love to see the animals out there. I'd love to see the birds. I think I would just thoroughly enjoy it. As opposed to...
I do. I think you would as well, because I certainly do.
I know. So, I mean, maybe they're jealous. Maybe they want you to let them see it.
Yeah.
I remember taking my grandson out doing things, and you know, it's always this discovery, the fascination of, you know, when you get older, you get a little more jaded, but I always think of little kids, you know, 4, 5 year olds, 6 year olds maybe, who are seeing things for the first time, and you start to see all of that through their eyes, and it's this beautiful orange butterfly. And I discovered, I learned something, and what I learned is the color of the butterfly, the monarch, is to warn other people that they are toxic.
But butterflies are toxic?
Yeah, the monarchs are toxic because they feed on something in the milkweed. When their eggs are laid on the milkweed, there's a toxin that's put there, and when they're hatched, when they come out, they feed on that. And the reason they're orange is to let nature know that they are toxic, and that presumably protects them.
Yeah.
You didn't know that, huh?
I did not know they were toxic. I thought they just tasted bad. But having never eaten one myself, I don't know.
No, that's something I learned. I also learned that they weigh less than a dime, but
yes,
that they will fly 50 to 100 miles a day.
Yeah, they fly thousands of miles, I guess. And I guess when the ones that are migrating to Mexico right now, they call the super generation of monarchs. And my understanding is that when they get their they're tattered and tired looking, and they actually don't, they live just long enough to lay eggs, I guess, but when they get to Mexico. But can you imagine if something the size of a butterfly migrating thousands of miles? I think it's just remarkable.
I'm amazed that the birds can fly that distance and migrate. But when you think of a butterfly, and it's just in your video, you talk about fourth generation returns.
Yes.
So the butterflies migrate south. They stop along the way and they lay their eggs. You've got another generation that picks up and continues the journey.
Mm.
And then they turn around and they come back to the same meadow.
Yes.
To the same place.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And that's absolutely fascinating. And does the HOA understand all of this? Do they know the story? Do they understand what they're asking you to give up?
Well, I have explained it to them a whole bunch of times. As well as made them all aware of the video that's out there that walks through, you know, how we care for the property and why we care for it that way. So, yes, they do know all that. They just don't seem to care.
That's sad.
Yeah.
That's
I think so, too. So, that's, you know, and we've not been, a lot of people have said, oh, well, you know, you should do a GoFundMe page or sell T-shirts or try to raise money for the lawsuit. And much as I dislike writing checks to my attorney, who's been very good, by the way, I'm very pleased with the law firm that we're using. I do feel like there are an awful lot of things that are more needy than me that people can support. I'm very fortunate to be in a position where, you know, I can afford to pay for this lawsuit. I don't like to, but I can afford to pay for it. And I feel like I have a responsibility as a steward of this property. I've lived here for 12 years. I have, you know, other than when I'm traveling for work, I work from this desk looking out these windows where I'm sitting right now, at my meadow and at this beautiful place. And I have a responsibility, I think, to protect it. And so that's why we've not tried to raise money or do anything like that with it. We think it's just our responsibility to do. But the reason I've gone public with this in the last month or so, because this lawsuit's been going on for 3 years. And I finally, you know, I kept thinking that if we just talked to them as reasonable people, you know, they would start to understand why we were doing this. And they finally just made it very clear that they just don't care. And they're working with an insurance company attorney because, you know, the lawsuit is set up so that I had to sue them to get the violation removed. And so since I'm suing them, then their insurance company is paying for it. The insurance company has since dropped them, but is obligated to pay for this lawsuit that happened when they were the carrier. And so it has cost them absolutely nothing to be stubborn through this whole three-year period, while it has cost me tens of thousands of dollars to get through, you know, the pretrial negotiations and the attempts to settle, and which they just wouldn't budge. Every single proposal we ever got from them was, oh, and you have to destroy the meadow when you sell the house. Every single proposal has been like that. So I decided to go public with it because it has cost them nothing to do this and to be stubborn, and it's cost me a great deal of money. And so I decided if I went public that maybe people being aware of what they're doing will cost them something. And the reaction I've had is that, yeah, it is. There are a lot of people locally here who are very upset about it. The community as a whole, just, you know, other than one person who was on the board who was part of the original violation, you know, citing us for the meadow, she engaged me on Facebook for a while, but she stopped doing that when I pointed out to her that every time she did that, she was just making the video more popular because it would show up in more people's threads. That's the only negative voice I've heard about this. That's the only opposition to the meadow I've heard. Everything else from all of the communities out here has been that people support the meadow, that people can't believe that the HOA is doing that. So I think that by going public, I've at least, you know, cost them some status, maybe in the local community. I hope so, because what they're doing is wrong. It's completely wrong.
Well, and you can never fight these things under cover of darkness. That's something I've known for a very long time. A few weeks ago, I interviewed a grandmother who has a pink playhouse on her property for her granddaughter who lives with her and is sick, and that's her safe place. That's where she goes for therapy. It's where she goes to be creative. It's her place. And before moving in, she had asked if they could have it, and we're told, oh, yes, they could. And so once they moved in and the little house came, the board decided they didn't like it. And, of course, she went public. And, it, you know, news stories picked it up, and TVs and newspapers, and it went all over the social media. And I think just the fact that it was out there, the HOA decided they were going to back off. They did not like the publicity, and they sent them a notice saying that they were going to let them keep they weren't going to force them to take it down right now. So I don't know what happened, but the fact that it's out there, the fact that it's not a secret, and the fact that they're going to have to operate under broad daylight does tend to give them quite a chilling effect.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. Tonight, they're actually having the first HOA meeting that they've had since the video was released and since the newspaper article came out. And I haven't decided yet whether I'm going to attend because I'm honestly just very tired of going to their meetings. But I'm curious whether any of the neighbors are going to show up and ask them about it, because certainly the neighborhood is far more aware of what's going on now than they were a month ago. So we'll see. I'll probably go by and just listen, and if anybody has questions, answer them. But I don't know. The sad thing is most people just don't care about the HOA. They don't support it or oppose it. Just don't care. And so, you know, as a result, this very small group of people who are on the board year after year after year have a pretty free hand to do whatever they want.
Well, most people don't want the HOA. The problem is they can't get housing without it because there are municipal mandates across the country, nationwide.
Yep.
It's so easy, you know, it's wonderful. And that's why I say it's not there for you. It's not, you know, the HOA was never conceived for the homeowners. It was conceived, actually it was started by a guy named Byron Hankey, who didn't like to see straight grid-like streets, and he wanted sort of more curvilinear streetscapes and cul-de-sacs and all of that. And local municipal government said, no, those are more expensive to maintain. He says, well, if we have the homeowners themselves maintain it, would you consider it? And they said, yeah. So that's how it all started. Once they realized that they could get, and people would buy, once they realized that they could get all their tax dollars, you know, it was hands off. It was, okay, you've got to have, Mr. Developer, if you're going to build in my jurisdiction, you've got to have an HOA. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I collect all the tax dollars. So you're paying twice for everything.
I was not aware of that. I wasn't aware that's how it started.
That's exactly how it started back in the 60s. And it was a guy by the name of Byron Hankey who started it because he was, you know, he was a city planner. He wanted something more prettier than just the plain grid. Of course, now we've gone back to the grid because I don't know why they think they want the grid, but it's all design, and that's how the HOA started. I have no problem with you deciding I want to live in one, but if everybody else says they don't want one, I want them to have that option, and that option does not exist. They don't have that.
That is certainly true of all of the developments in Loudoun County. They all seem to have HOAs. Fortunately, there are also a lot of independent properties that don't have HOAs. I find it interesting that that when you're looking at listings for real estate, a house not being in an HOA is very much pitched as a positive about any particular property.
Absolutely, because there aren't that many.
Yeah.
And what they're doing in Fairfax, which is where I am, they're tearing down all the older properties that have a little bit of acreage and or a little bit of land, a yard, and replacing them with high-density buildings or this walkable community. I mean, even you'd be amazed at what's going into parking lots. I mean, they're being transformed. You can have an entire village in what used to once be a parking lot.
Mm.
And they say, oh, it's good for you. It's a walkable community. They can go. They can do all of that.
Mm.
What I find really ironic is that your meadow sits on a road called Tranquility Road.
It is. That's right.
And you'd think that it would be a tranquil place. I mean, I'm sure the meadow is a very, I know the meadow is a very tranquil place, but to think that this whole thing is brewing up on a place called Tranquility Road.
Tranquility Road is well named. It runs alongside the western edge of a major regional park that's right across the road from us, Franklin Park. And there are non-HOA houses all the way along the road until you get to a couple of houses before us. As I said earlier, right next door to us is, I said 17th, I think it's actually an 18th century farmhouse that is on, that has about 17 acres that is farmland. And then the further you go down the road, it turns to gravel, and there are a lot of old farmhouses down there. There's some newer houses down there. There's a winery that was built by some German folks a few years ago. And a wedding venue. It's a very beautiful country setting out here. That's why we moved here, and that's why I don't want to mow it all like a golf course.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you at all. I wish you all the luck in the world with your lawsuit. You said it's in the middle of March or of December. You know, we'll be following that. I want to know how it goes. I hope that you have a judge who's got some sense in terms of what's going on and doesn't just decide to. Unfortunately, a lot of the judges are attorneys who sort of grew up in industry law firms. So they're very much on the HOA. They think of HOAs and not so much property rights.
But yeah, this is, we'll see how it goes, and trials are always high risk. I would have much preferred that we could have reasonably settled this without going to trial, but they weren't interested in that. But from a property rights perspective, you know, I've been through this and through this and through this with my attorney, with other experts in the field, and I think we have an extremely strong case from a property rights perspective. And you pull out the wildlife, you pull out the monarch butterflies, you pull out, you know, all of those emotional things that are attached to this, and we still have a very strong case. And to me, when you add in the need for us to be more conservation-minded and the need for us to support the monarch butterfly population, then that just makes it even more evident that that we should be successful. I hope we are. I really do hope we are.
I hope you are, because property rights, without it, forget it. You're just not going to go anywhere. But reach out to other venues. Reach out to sort of national TV shows and have them come out and do something. Have them tell your story as well. Because you're going to need the support of people who are outraged.
Yeah.
You're not going to fight this one-on-one. You got a board that's got the power, and they want the meadow gone. And you've got you who says, look, I enjoy it, and I don't want to do that.
That's true. And the fact is, the law seems to say, and we'll find out in court, but the law seems to say that they do not have the right to do that. And I'm just not about to let somebody usurp my property rights without having, you know, without at least putting up a fight.
They probably don't. There have been a lot of cases recently where HOAs have lost because they were acting ultra vires, which is outside the scope of their authority.
Mm-hmm.
There's one association, you say you can't do away with the HOA. There's one association, townhouses in Alexandria a couple of years ago. They couldn't, it was too difficult to do away with the association, but the alternative was beautiful. Their solution was to gut the CC&R. So there are no CC&Rs, there's no restrictions, there's no nothing. And the association has the right to exist, to collect dues, to maintain a one-acre piece of land. And that's it. That's all they have the right to do, because the owners themselves decided they didn't want all of this nonsense, and they got rid of it.
Mm. Well, that's fantastic, because the other thing, you know, we talk about people in this HOA don't really care about the HOA. The thing people need to remember is that we do have votes. The HOA belongs to us.
Yes.
We can change the rules if we want to. Yes. We can change the rules if it's important. I would love to see this community attempt to do something like that. Whether they will or not, I don't know. I'm so tired of this, I'm not sure I would be the person to organize it. But when this is all over, assuming that we're successful in court, then I do intend to become active in the HOA and try to keep things like this from happening again. And also, I would very much like to see our HOA become one of those Loudoun County homeowners associations that are, you know, conscious of how we impact the environment and conscious of what we can do to improve the environment for ourselves and for everyone else. I think that only raises property values.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And the breathing room you have is going to enhance that considerably. But just a quick end note with that association I was telling you about where they gutted the CC&Rs.
Mm-hmm.
Property values went up because now all of a sudden the homeowners were able to make additions, make improvements to their houses without having to go through the rigmarole of going through to the HOA. It did. And people were a lot happier, and they came together and they worked together, and they plow the roads in the winter together, and there's no HOA involved.
That's fantastic.
It is a good thing. Mike, we're out of time. Thank you so much for doing this. Good luck.
Well, thank you, Sue. This has been a pleasure.
Thanks.
I will keep you posted on how we do.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.